Blog Talk.
I guess the music is not coming on this evening. So welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck of katelovingschenck.com and the author of the upcoming book, Prayer Prescriptions, Spiritual Remedies for Long-Lasting Health. Sam Small is my guest this evening. Sam's most recent project is a series of video classroom teachings called Dying into Love, featuring Ram Dass and Joan Halifax. It is highly, highly recommended. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Joining me now is Sam Small. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Kate. Thanks so much for having me on the air today.
Thank you. I need to know how you came. First of all, I just want to ask you how you came to get involved in making these. It's a series of videos, and they're 18. It's about an 18-hour presentation of a very interesting small, 30-minute type videos that have these teachers, these wonderful teachers, teaching about death. How did you get involved with that?
Yeah, Maui is responsible for it. I moved from New York City after 28 years directly to Maui about seven or eight years ago. And I moved here because of the community of people that live here. It's really rather extraordinary. The quality, the ethic, and the mindset of people that live here. And there's your theme song.
I'm having a glitch in the. Anyway, go ahead.
That's all right.
That's part of what's going on, I think.
Yeah. And it happens as part of that community. One of the people that lives here is Ram Dass. And he has been doing this kind of work for 40 years. Loving service work to work with people that are on their deathbeds. Discover what that whole process is about, and other teachers as well, Joan Halifax and Dale Burglum, they've all been doing this work for 30 plus years, teaching. They themselves sitting with people who are dying, and teaching other people how to do the same. How to be with someone who is dying. It's a unique process, and it holds a very special place in our lives.
Yeah.
And in our modern society, in our consumer culture world. Many of the aspects of it have been sanitized away from people's lives. And because it is, a challenging transition period for anybody, a lot of folks just don't want to deal with it. They don't like the word. It's it represents something dark and evil and bad. That's not really, I think, accurate nor healthy for our population, culturally, psychologically. It's not happy. It's not helping. Let's put it that way. It's not helping. There's a real dysfunction. There's a real denial around death. I'm a communicator. I'm a video producer and creator of content, and my goal is to create content that helps people, create content that makes a difference. And this work has been going on for quite some time. And I had the opportunity, because of living on Maui, to get involved in the work that these people were doing.
I've been able to
create a conduit to be able to take this work. For instance, Dying Into Love is videos shot during three different workshops that were presented here on Maui. Ram Dass participated in all of them. They were staged by a local organization called Doorway Into Light. One of our community members here, his name is Bodhi B, and Bodhi is a Sufi minister, interfaith minister, and a funeral director.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. He's a fascinating guy, and his heart is absolutely in it to the max, has even... I'll speak a little bit more later, but he's even created something called the Death Store, which is a new kind of funeral home, a small scale, independent, family-oriented funeral home, providing all the same services that the corporations provide in the widely dispersed funeral homes, but in a completely different mindset. This is designed to, you know, empower families and individuals to participate in the process as much as possible, instead of just turning over a loved one to a corporate entity that is just going to process them and take your money. And leave you with no sense of participation in the passing of your loved one. That's part of the denial that people are that's common today. We don't have rituals anymore that involve death. We don't get close to death. Someone dies and they're whisked away, and they just vanish. And in our consumer culture, death is related to aging, which is not youth. And if it's not youth, you know, all the advertisers, all the marketing, all the mass media, all the movies and music and everything that's put out there as consumer product is all designed for 18 to 35-year-olds. And there's nothing that's being put out there, for anybody older. Even the television show The Golden Girls probably could not get on the air today. You know, because it's targeted towards an older audience. You watch the evening news, the network TV news, and that's where you see, you know, ads for Depends and, you know, a couple of products for older people. And that's their ghetto TV, you know, network evening news.
Yes. Now, this funeral director, Bodhi.
Yeah.
Fascinating to me. It seems like he is creating, he might be like the tip of a movement of how to deal with death in a funeral director kind of capacity. That is just wonderful, wonderful news to me.
And we hope that it is the beginning. We do hope that it is the beginning of a movement. The Death Store was conceived and is being developed as a franchise, so that other people will be in their local communities, will be able to provide localized services for community members who are in transition, community members who are dying and their families. And they do it, you know, it's built as a business, but it's also a rallying point for community members who care. so that they can coordinate. One of the things that we do is here on the local level on Maui is that there is a group of community people who care and who volunteer. That if someone is in the latter stages of dying, that they're not alone. No one should have to be alone. And so people are trained and are willing to take turns and to sit and simply be with someone who's dying.
Yeah.
Hospice care has evolved, greatly and will continue to. It's a necessary environment, that people find themselves in.
Right.
And it could be, it's great stuff, and it can be even better. Because what's missing is the humanity that comes from intimately understanding your own mortality.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
People live today with a sense of entitlement. I'm entitled to my life. Life doesn't owe me anything. I don't owe anybody. I'm not connected to anything. Because the marketers don't want you to be connected to anything other than their brands. They market products to kids to capture them. If you start using a brand of toothpaste before you're 18, the chances are that you will use that same brand of toothpaste until you're dead. And it goes for all consumer products. It's just the way people are. They buy into a particular mindset. They buy into a particular way, and that becomes the way for the rest of their lives. And the structure of our society is today that the people who determine what's good and bad for you are only interested in profits. They're only interested in selling you consumer goods. And so everything is structured to disempower individuals from participating in the intimacy of their own lives. And death is, one of the most intimate things there is.
Yes. Did you find that by creating the film that your own worldview of death changed?
I guess, part of the reason is for me doing the video work around this was that I've sought to embrace these aspects of my life for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I changed. I'm fortunate. When I grew up, normal was a four-letter word.
Right, right.
My life has been alternative all the way down the line.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had a soda, Pepsi or any canned soda. I'm 55 years old. I was 16 the last time I had a can of soda.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a typical consumer.
Now, did you come from like a spiritualist background with lots of spirituality, like your parents and everything?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, just a very pragmatic. My parents actually my grandparents were from Russia and came to the United States as part of the socialist movement, the progressive movement. They were involved in the International Women's Garment Workers Union in New York City.
Yeah.
My grandfather was a public speaker for the Russian community. I was surrounded by public service. Mm-hmm. That's what my family did. And so being able to use the technical skills to continue what my grandfather started, to me, has been very gratifying.
I use the
technical skills that I have. When I was in school, I was the AV geek. I was the kid who had the movie projector and the slide projector in the classrooms, and I facilitated the morning announcements in school. And I grew up with, you know, comfortable around electronics and music and radio. My first professional work was in radio, and I migrated into television. While I worked my way through college in a speech communications program by working at a soft rock FM station. And when I left college, I moved back to the New York metro area and applied myself to teleproduction, and it's the only work that I've ever done.
It sounds like that you've had a lifelong interest in doing this. So you work with making films and such, yeah.
Yeah, it comes, you know, being a communicator, being a professional communicator came very naturally to me. My grandfather was an inspiration. My mother was a stage manager in local theater, so I grew up backstage. Backstage was my babysitter. So the performance world and then the electronic aspects of that have always come very naturally to me, and a concern for content and people and understanding that what is offered to people is not in their best interest. There's an agenda. The man has an agenda. And that agenda is not necessarily in your best interest. And we're seeing that on so many different levels today. We're seeing it politically. We're seeing it economically. So many of our institutions are drawing us down paths that are not in people's best interests.
Right, right. And people need to stand up for what it is that is their best interest. They have to take a stand and create community around what is people's best interest. You know, that's so important.
And the messages around death and dying are unavoidable. To me, it's a great hook for me to be able to address so many different issues. There's issues of spirituality around death. There's issues of community support around death. There's, you know, issues of whether of corporate price gouging and other aspects where people have an opportunity to take control of the process back. Most people don't know that, you know, if a loved one dies at home, that even a loved one could die at home. And most people are, you know, dying in medical facilities these days.
Yes, yes.
You know, why? Well, because the medical system is milking every penny out of that person, and it's only when they're done doing that that they release them in the last couple of days, usually, you know, just at the very end, when medical, you know. When the medical system finally determines that they have, and this is so telling, that they have failed and the person will die.
Oh, my gosh. It's so true, though, isn't it?
Right. Death is a failure. You know, to the medical community, that's how it's seen. It's you know, instead of death, you know, the Dying to Love has a group of teachers. There's somebody else out there named Stephen Jenkinson, who also teaches. He taught. He's a Harvard, Yale Divinity student, graduate, and has been teaching in medical schools palliative care for decades now. Teaching the medical establishment how to deal with dying people, and which they don't want because it doesn't look good on their charts.
Right.
You know, nobody, no doctor wants anybody to die on their watch. So they resist if you have a, you know, do not resuscitate. Well, you know, they'll resist that. And they'll just keep the person alive. There's a lot of aspects that they can do that now, not just with physical things, but with injections. So you don't even know that they're interfering with a person's natural trajectory because it's done through, you know, chemical injections. Pharmaceutical injections, but Stephen has there's a wonderful film about time that he spent with an East Canadian and time that he spent with Native Americans in Canada. What are they called? Native Canadians. Learning, there's a film about him called Grief Walker, which is a delightful, delightful film.
Oh, that's a lovely idea. Mm-hmm.
And he describes, you know, some of what he's absorbed from Native culture. And there's a story that he tells about the Christian preacher preaching to the tribes and people, you know, having their minds blown by what the preacher is telling them. He's telling them about heaven and he's telling them about hell. And, you know, these are completely, completely new concepts to Native thinking. They don't think that way at all.
Right.
And they bring their community elder into the discussion, and he's, you know, interested. They have an open mind. They're willing to believe what anybody is telling them, especially if it's being done passionately and thoroughly. And the preacher is going through the whole thing about death and, you know, and heaven and Jesus and hell and all of the stuff. And then finally says, and in Jesus, if you embrace Jesus, you don't have to die. It's life everlasting. Mm-hmm. And the native's response to that is, oh, he says, yeah, you know, you had me up until that point.
Yeah.
Because I have to die. My children need me to die. I die as a loving service to my children, to be able to pave the way for them and prepare the next incarnation for them the same way that I did here.
Yes.
Here I grew up, I built a life and created an environment where my children could come into the world and be safe. And I have to go ahead into the next life and do the same thing for them. So,
well, what
you
you're describing, remember in the movie, not in the movie, but in the series of videos, there's a line that Ram Dass, and there's a whole discussion around, that death is safe. And the way you are describing the Native cultural worldview is that death is safe. And this whole idea that you have heaven and hell and Jesus Christ is your savior or else is not safe.
Exactly. Exactly. So much of what our culture sees as normal today is, you know, in my way of looking at things, and I certainly don't want to, you know, insult anyone's beliefs, but I just don't see it as accurate. I see it as just distorted and
say pathological even.
Well, you know, anything
anything
that's, that, you know, when you get down to fundamentalists of whatever their ilk, it starts to skew your thinking. And Native North American thinking is not the only non-Western thought process that sees death, you know, differently. In Buddhist, you know, traditions, everything that you do, every breath you take, is acknowledged to be practice and setting your path for your death, because death will happen, and it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. I'm preparing. Mm-hmm. I'm preparing for my death. I'm because why? Because I want to. You know, if there is reincarnation, or if there are other aspects to existence than what's, you know, right here in front of us, then I want to be able to move on into the next existence, into that next incarnation, in the most beneficial way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I live and breathe, you know, every breath with deep appreciation for what I have, and in preparation for the next great thing.
Right.
And
I thought
I
was just going to say the difference between the teachings of Ram Dass and Joan Halifax are interestingly juxtaposed with each other. Ram Dass has a knowingness about what death will bring, and Joan Halifax has an openness about not knowing. And I thought that was so interesting. I must say that as I'm listening and learning from this, that I'm becoming more of a not knowing kind of person, because now I was raised with a lot of spirituality and spiritualists, with a lot of spiritualists in my background. And so I used to think, and until this film, that pretty much everything was said in my mind, that there is totally life after death and this and this and this. And I'm sure that there is, but on the other hand, I don't know. And this is the first time in my life I've been able to actually admit that I don't know. And that in and of itself is liberating.
It is. I think it's wonderfully empowering because it allows the individual to not necessarily subscribe to any dogma.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is tremendously liberating. I love Joan. Joan Halifax is just one of the most extraordinary human beings that I know.
Well, I'm not surprised that you would think so. I don't know. I have, you know, certainly know about her, but I found her to be just a really interesting woman, and to see her so many hours on film was just delightful, but not necessarily delightful, but very, very deep and intimate.
Yeah. And you know, there's no agenda there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's
mm-hmm.
just, she's there to serve, and she's not attached to any one particular belief system. She herself is a Zen minister and runs Upaya Center in near Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a Buddhist retreat center where they practice Zen Buddhism. But I think part of, you know, Zen Buddhism is very minimalist. It's
mm-hmm.
It's very clean and very spacious. And I think what I see from her is that spaciousness just permeates, that there's no place for dogma. There's no reason for dogma. And her embracing this notion of not knowing is most intimate. It's an ancient Chinese saying from, you know, an early teacher. Who's, I couldn't tell you what name, Joan Good.
Mm-hmm.
she's a scholar of this stuff.
Yes.
She's looked at it, and Ram Dass too. They both looked at this stuff from every direction. They've just absorbed it from all the traditions. Ram Dass, you know, is a scholar in Hindu tradition, so he can talk about incarnations and karma. And sees it from that perspective. And Joan understands all of that, but basically, you know, what I hear her saying is that we just don't know.
Isn't that lovely? It's really interesting.
It's wonderful.
Yes.
It's wonderful because it allows you to be open to all the possibilities. You know, somebody can sit and prescribe and say, this is the way that it happens. And for me personally, you know, anybody who sits down and I've got an open mind, but anybody who sits down and tells me that the name of God is George and he's this guy that lives on a planet over there, or that the moon is, you know, not what we think it is, that it's, you know, this telepathic amplifier for some other planet that, that, you know, yes, there could be, you know, I mean, you know,
sure,
chances are, and based on the archaeological evidence, chances are there were off-world, you know, entities, you know, beings that came here and visited us and changed things on Earth and contributed to human evolution. You know, we can't figure out how they built the pyramids.
Right.
You know, so you know, for me, that's always, everything comes back to me. That's my personal benchmark, is like, you know, nobody can tell me how the pyramids got built.
Right.
So if they can't tell me that, then you can't tell me that with such certainty that there is a heaven, that there is a hell, that the earth is, you know, that these particular stories are true and accurate and you know, to be believed literally and taken literally. You know, me personally, I don't know, and I'm happy not knowing. I'm happier being open to all the possibilities.
Well, you know, that's so true, what you just said. If you can't tell me who built the pyramids, then you can't tell me anything. You really can't tell me anything. I love it. That's so cool. Go ahead. What were you saying?
There's a wonderful quote from Neem Karoli Baba, who was Ram Dass's guru when he went to India. That's who he was introduced to and allowed him to embrace the Indian culture.
Mm-hmm.
And the quote is that it's easier to see God in everything than to try and figure it all out.
That makes perfect sense. That's a very mystical perception of and a mystical thing, you know, way to live.
And a practical, it's pragmatic. It's like, you know,
mm-hmm.
what, I'm beating my head against the wall trying to, you know, sift through all these different dogmas and belief systems and all of this stuff. And what I really only need to do is just see God in everything.
I love that, too. That is really neat. And that is certainly what Jesus said. And all this stuff about heaven and hell and all this and that is not anything that he would even know what they were talking about. I am not a biblical scholar, and I'm not even that much of a Christian, but I mean, I have put myself in line with thinking about Jesus sometimes, and I know that this is not anything like he wouldn't even recognize it.
No, because it's all been used as forms of social control. It's economic and social control. You know, I think, you know, there are less and less people, you know, participating in the primary organized religions.
That's true.
There are fewer and fewer people that see themselves as practicing Catholics. The churches are empty. You know, the fundamentalist ones, the ones that are like, you know, that are supercharged because that's social control to the max. Those people are brainwashed. Those are, you know, I personally see them as cults. They're, you know, because they have all the characteristics of cults.
Right.
And essentially those kinds of extreme forms of knowingness. That's what America is founded on, being able to avoid.
Yeah.
I don't have the freedom, you know, to not subscribe. It's as much the freedom to subscribe as it is the freedom to not be forced to subscribe. And the current, you know, much of the current political environment is, you know, from the conservative platform, is essentially trying to force me to adopt their conservative spiritual belief system. And I think it's wrong. It's that to me, it's so interesting, because that to me is un-American.
Yes. Well, we don't have much of an America like the founding fathers wouldn't even recognize this place, that's for sure.
No. No, they warned us. You know, everybody's warned us about it. We've lost control of our country to, you know, the banking
greed.
And corporate
absolute
and,
greed.
And corporate
absolute greed.
Greed.
Yeah. And it is true, and it's not even being negative, it's true. And there's all kinds of stories floating around about it, and it's just that, you know, we have a lot of environmental people here, and I'm going to have one of my friends come on the show. We have what is called fracking here, where they're, destroying the water in order to make natural gas.
Yes.
And so they, it's criminal, and what they, and what they're doing is moving into poor communities and scaring them half to death, but they wouldn't do this with wealthy communities. So,
right.
And my friend has, I can't really talk about it now because the people are still sort of in the throes of a lawsuit, but this is just, it is criminal, and it's terrifying, and nobody should have to live through this sort of thing.
And it's part of that it's part of what happens to people when they lose touch with their own mortality. They lose touch with their own humanity and what makes them human. And it allows them this notion that it's okay to exploit the earth. It's okay to mortgage our children's children's future.
Yes.
Because we don't, part of what happens in the environment that we have, death has been sanitized. Death has been removed from our world view, and along with it has gone all of the rituals that in human history, every culture in human history up until recently has rituals that are a part of their lives that allow them to remain connected to their ancestors. They hold their ancestors in regard. They hold the elderly with high regard. And we just throw them away. And without those rituals, you know, if you look at it from the energetic side, the notion, if I subscribe to any understanding, for me it's about this notion that's commonly called oneness.
That we
are all one, and in some ways, you know, on a fundamental level, intricately, you know, connected to one another, and a part of the same energy and a part of the same thing, and that connectedness is important. Back to Stephen Jenkinson's expression of native thinking, that if my father passed about a year ago, and if my father had gone on to, you know, another plane of existence, another incarnation, and is preparing the way for me, and the subtleties of that energy that we live in and that we all share can reach him. Maybe it's subtle, you know, maybe it's subtle, but through ritual and focused energy, it seems to me that if he's out there in some form, if I put the right kind of energy out there towards him, it can reach him.
Right.
And he needs that from me.
Yeah, you can't. He does not need for you to just ignore him.
No, and you know he doesn't. And he didn't need that in his latter stages in life on this earth. He did, no elder needs for their children to discount them and just say, you're just an old man. What do you know?
Absolutely. You know, this is what happens in our culture. Right, that's
which
what
is good. You know, if you're old, you're thrown away. You can't get a job. You can't. Nobody wants you, and even your own family is trained to discount you. And environmentally, we've got so many pollutants and stuff that Alzheimer's and people's mental you know, facility, I think, is diminished in later years because of environmental factors.
Yes, yes.
You know, so we just, you know, and all of it leads to just this exploitation that it's okay to discount your elders. It's okay to just forget, you know, someone who's died. They're gone. They can't do anything for me anymore. So they're of no value to me. And I'll just forget them. And we have no cultural rituals that connect us to our elderly and to our ancestors anymore.
Yes.
You know. And that's really sad. It's really
well, along
sad.
With this idea of oneness, then I believe goes hand in hand with love. The whole, I think, love and oneness. And then another one is living in the eternal now, living in the present moment. Somehow, those three concepts, the oneness, the love, and the eternal now, all go hand in hand and really take us beyond all of this fear of death and even having to worry about it.
Sure.
You know?
There's a wonderful freedom in you know, training yourself to live in the present moment, so that you're not controlled by future expectations. You're not controlled by, you know, promises that are made through some dogma that are essentially you know, trying to control you, and you're not even ruled by the past experiences, which may have been out of your control. Things, you know, perpetrated against you, and yet, you know, certainly with, you know, children who survive, you know, any kind of abuse, psychological abuse, you know, among the on the list, that all of that stuff you can let it all go. By finding that place that allows, finding that practice that allows you to live in that present moment. Ram Dass's book, Be Here Now, you know,
was
an absolute, you know, turning point in Western culture to bring all these understandings, you know, back into Western culture. And it is from their perspective, the teachers, you know, Ram Dass and Joan Halifax and Dale Borglum and Bodhi, they're all coming from a place of first having learned meditation and understanding the value of meditation and what it has to contribute. Because if people doing hospice work, if the goal in tending to someone who is dying, in sitting with someone who is dying, the goal essentially, your job, what you're there to do, is to find a place within yourself to be neutral, to be calm, and to have equanimity.
Yes,
and no judgment. And just find that centered, neutral place, which they call presence.
Mm-hmm.
That's all in the moment of passing. That's all the dying person needs. They just need that calm presence.
Yes.
Not somebody who's, you know, doing, coaching them, you know, or trying to draw them back. With, you know, all your children are going to miss you, or showing you pictures of your life and stuff like that. It's better to respect the sanctity of that process that the person is going through and allow them the space to transition in a way that's right for them.
Right,
you know, most people end up in some fashion or another dying alone. Because, you know, hospice people, workers and people in the hospitals tell you all the time that, you know, the person was with them and they were there, they were hanging on to life, and somebody was with them, you know, all the time, and it was when the person left the room to go to the bathroom that the dying person chose that moment.
Yes, I don't think anybody really does die alone. That's sort of a fallacy.
Well, there may not necessarily be someone else in the room with them.
Yeah, I understand that point, you know, but I'm just saying that there's a whole chorus of otherworldly beings that are pulling them away.
Right. From an energetic standpoint, you're not dying into emptiness or nothingness.
Yes.
You're dying
yes.
into love. But you're not, you know, all of the anecdotal evidence of near-death experiences,
yes.
you know, universally people talk about near-death experience as a wonderful thing, that white light, that pure loving energy, and the ones that survive it talk about, you know, this, you know, someone reaching in and pulling them back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this notion is that if a person who is, you know, transitioning and getting ready for death, that an active presence in their environment is niggling them. You know, to just, you know, it's like giving them noogies to just, you know, stay with it, stay here. And what they benefit from the most is someone's presence who's neutral and who
yes.
can simply be connected to their own center, to their own loving energy, and their own connection to the loving energy that pervades all around us. And you know, for me, that's God. Space to me, space is God. It's not
yeah
empty.
Now this
it's
the latest you must have heard about the book Dying to Be Me by Anita Morjani, and Wayne Dyer had discovered her. But there are lots of stories like that. And I guess her body was riddled with cancer. She died. But there was just something about the unconditional loving experience that penetrated her in her being, that she came back completely cancer free, and she's talking about that, you know, everywhere she goes.
Right.
That's just fascinating to me, and I think it happens many more times than the doctors certainly like to think about it or whatever.
Well, you know, if our beliefs are tremendously powerful. Placebo works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And our beliefs are tremendously powerful. And if a cancer is present in the body that has manifest out of, as often happens, I think, out of a belief structure, if mm-hmm. we're able to release that belief structure, then the body responds, and the immune system can kick back in and fight the cancer off.
Yes.
I was
with my mother when she died, and that I had one of those unconditional loving experiences from that for about a week, where nothing bothered me in terms of what people were doing, or I had no judgments about people, and I think it was her gift to me, but also it was unconditional love that is being described in your program. And something, it was just amazing. I was in another realm of existence with this unconditional love, with no judgment, no criticism. And I was not really in the world, basically, because the world is something else often. And so I think I clinched, and it was because of my mother's death that I had that experience. It was very profound. Very profound.
Yeah. Well, you know, of all of the emotions, I think love is different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's love is connected to something that's larger than just emotion. Love is connected to you know, an energy that, you know, for my understanding, I mean, what seems to work the most in my worldview is that love is what God is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, God is love.
God is love, and mm-hmm. those messages, you know, are fundamental in some traditions, but they've been distorted.
Yes. Well, the word love is very distorted, but that doesn't really mean anything. so much else has been, and it's not really, we can't be bothered with that.
Right.
You know, we cannot be bothered with that at all.
And that's the, so that's why we titled the series of videos Dying Into Love.
Yes.
Because that is, it seems, the pool that we die into. We go, mm-hmm. we come from love and we die and go back into love. Our spirit, Ram Dass talks about our souls, and that our soul is everlasting.
And in
some of the belief structures, you know, there is a final resolution to the soul when its work is done through many, 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 many incarnations, and they've burned
mm-hmm.
through all of their karma, and they've done everything that soul needs to do, and then they're ready to, you know, transition into something else. And even then, I don't know that they know what that is.
Right, right. Once again, how could you really know?
Yeah, how can you really know?
Yeah.
And there's Joan speaks in the video. There's a wonderful sequence where, you know, she's speaking of the preparation. In order to be present with someone who is dying, you can't simply will yourself into that mode. You can't force yourself into equanimity. You can't force yourself into neutrality. You can't
right.
force yourself into that active present moment of simply being with no agenda and no judgments. And
mm-hmm.
you can practice for it. And they advocate, you know, meditation as a form of preparation. That we can prepare ourselves, but the actuality of it is something that just simply rises of its own accord in the moment as it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
We can't force ourselves to that place. We can only prepare ourselves for its blossoming. And she quotes the Dalai Lama talking about how the human mind is untrainable.
Mm-hmm.
That we can't make ourselves go there. That there are higher levels of consciousness that exist, but we can't train ourselves to access that stuff. We can train ourselves to remove all of the roadblocks
mm-hmm.
that,
mm-hmm.
that keep us from spilling over into a higher consciousness. We can't will ourselves into a higher consciousness, but we can practice removing all of the roadblocks so that the blossoming into a higher consciousness can happen of its own accord.
Yes, I have noticed that birth and death are exactly the same in vibration. I'm a labor and delivery nurse. So, a lot of times the babies die, and so we have some of the nurses, including myself, are, you know, more suited to sitting with the people, with the patients, with the families when the baby is still alive and is dying, that kind of thing. That is you would think that that's a terrible thing, but one time, it is by many standards, but. One of the patients said to me that she would never change the experience because of how intimate, how enlivening it was for everybody to come together and help the baby transition and help the family. She had some sort of mystical experience to the whole thing. Now, you know, not everybody says that, but she stands out to me as being a really remarkable person because of the way she experienced that whole thing, and it was very profound for everybody to have that experience.
And I think it's accurate. It seems, you know, that she understands what it's all about.
She does, absolutely.
That's why I'm, you know, I've pursued this work as to be able to bring it to through the tool of mass media. to be able to bring it to as many people as possible, because it's you can't avoid death, and if we can use the discussion around death to crack open, you know, people's understandings, crack open the habitual programming that we've all been enculturated with and are force-fed through, you know, television and media and everything, and schools too. That we can, more and more people can get to that fundamental place and crack open into a spirituality that's not a dogma.
Yes.
And as people are leaving the churches and they're looking for something, they're needing you know, something, and this is one mechanism that offers people an opportunity to learn an aspect of spirit life that's not a religion.
Right.
That's why I particularly like the, you know, Joan's notion of, you know, not knowing is most intimate. You know, you don't have to know. You don't have to figure it all out. These things don't necessarily need names attached to them. Just like the Joan's quote of the Dalai Lama, our minds can't actually even comprehend it.
Right. I mean, they were talking about the conceptual models for death and so forth, and they're all guideposts. For instance, like the Tibetan Book of the Dead is a good example. It's a guidepost for people. And but on the other hand, the way she describes it, and that she wants to free herself of conceptual frameworks, she said. There was just something about the way she said it, and you could tell that she was really free. It's a freeing thing for her. It was really profound for me to listen to her say those things, because I always thought I should have an idea about this whole thing, and I need to know that there's life after death. Well, so what? You know what? I know that we don't just die and that's it, but I do know that. But I don't have to really know anything else.
Well, and
it
in their early days, Ram Dass and Joan as well, worked around people using psychedelics.
That's right.
Because that process allows people to crack open their perceptions of reality. And to understand that what we can see and what we're told about existence isn't necessarily the end all and be all, that there are things that are going on that are beyond our common perception, and are no less real our inability to perceive them.
Those are very powerful and they are great teachers.
Just one final little nugget. If people are interested in a structural understanding of this oneness, from a physics standpoint and a mathematical standpoint, there's a fellow named Nassim Haramein, who has completely deconstructed the math of modern physics. And has found that removing a lot of the constants and a lot of the manufactured things that physicists and mathematicians have created and embedded into quantum physics, that the math all goes back and agrees with sacred geometry.
Oh, sacred geometry, right on.
And that space is not empty; it's just extraordinarily well ordered.
Yeah,
and by virtue of its well orderedness, it's completely fluid. But space
Sam,
is universal and pervasive.
Tell us exactly. I don't mean to interrupt, but tell us exactly how people can access Dying into Love. It's dyinginto.love.com, right?
Yeah. We kept it simple.
DyingIntoLove.com.
There are two ways you can pay for it, with a single payment, or there's a payment plan, It's all there on the website. There's 18
right
hours of video. It's 42 individual videos, all in bite size and digestible chunks. You can stream it from the web and watch it that way, or you can actually download it to your own computer and save it. We just ask that you not, you know, duplicate it and start distributing it.
Right.
But you can save it to your hard drive, or you can burn it to a disk and take it with you.
Good.
It's a growing community. We've got a webinar that Dale Borglum, one of our presenters, is going to give on Saturday, that's a free event.
Will you be repeating that one? I mean, so that, because I work on the weekends, just wondering if you'll be able to.
Yes, the webinar will be posted into the Dying Into Love site. So if you're a subscriber, if you're a member of the Dying Into Love site, then you'll have access to that archive, and there'll be more online live workshops that people can call into.
That's the greatest investment I ever made, because not to say that I am a stranger to this subject. Obviously, I'm not, but I mean, I really am very thirsty for, you know, just not being so upset by death.
Right.
Like when my dogs die, or when my husband dies, I can imagine being distraught. But why should I be? I don't want to be.
The word, you know, that's so frequently used around death is loss. You know, I'm so sorry for your loss. And you know, we don't. What is it that we lost? Did our love for that person, is it now? Are we so shallow that just because they're not here anymore, we love them less?
Yeah. How stupid is that?
It's
very important what you said about your father. I'm sure that you think about your father and you communicate with him in different ways, but there are so many people that don't even think about how important it is to keep those lines of communication open just for yourself, so that you're not so burdened down by the physicality of life.
Well, and there's a dark side to it, because if for the lack of connection that people who pass on receive from those who are still here, what do they suffer?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're suffering something because we're not remembering them.
Yes.
We're not honoring them. We don't have rituals in our society that preserve that connectedness. I think we all suffer from that. Consumerism.
Baby boomers have a very, very distinct calling to change this ageism in our society. And I believe that we have the capacity to change this ridiculous notion we have about aging and about old people and how we need to celebrate this and go out and do different things and climb mountains and, you know, do all kinds of things to be a model for our young people, that being youthful is indeed a beautiful thing, because you're youthful. But we are older, and that is a beautiful thing because we're older. You know, the whole thing has to all be celebrated.
I agree.
Well, dear, we have come to the end of our hour. It's a little bit longer, and those who will listen to the archive will hear all of this. That's good. And I really appreciate your being on here. I appreciate having met you and having you on the show. So we'll continue our dialogue. I'll try to get onto your forum and say a few words, and we'll continue. So thank
That's
you
great,
again.
That's great, Kate. I appreciate that. If folks want to participate in the webinar this coming Saturday, we have a Facebook page, and there'll be a link on the Facebook page to be able to connect into the webinar, and that we hope they'll also be moved to visit us at dyingintolove.com and subscribe to the content that we have there.
Absolutely beautiful. I love it. And I appreciate
Great.
It. So thank you, Sam. I'm going to be playing. Yes, I'll be playing, again, music for, well, I actually didn't play music for Mother and Child because I guess there was a glitch in the electronic system. So let me try again. Thank you so much, Sam, and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. You too, Kate. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.